sleeping on some. I love you, I love you, I love you. That's all I want to say. Until I find a way, I will say the only words I know that you understand. Michelle, ma belle, son des mots qui vont très bien ensemble, I need to, I need to, I need to, I need to make you see, oh, what you mean to me. Until
ACB Radio Newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organizations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio Newsroom at www.acbradio.org. The ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Radio.
Memories of a great decade.
The 1970s.
What was so special about the 70s anyway? Find out on Roger Cool's homepage.
Well, if you visited my website, good on you.
Search Jeff's library to see why the Jamboree really does have more variety. Meet Mr. Vocoder himself, Kelly Johnson-Perger.
ACB, you're on.
And learn more about KJS Productions, who make many of our jingles. Read Nikki Keck's heartwarming story about how she turned a childhood dream into reality. So, for these websites and more, visit the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring. At interactive.acbradio.org.
ACB Radio.
Welcome to Blind Line, the original international talk show exclusively for the blind and vision impaired. I'm Jonathan Mosen. It is a fairly nice autumn Monday where I am, and hopefully if your clock went forward over the weekend, you're listening to us at the right time. I guess you must be. Well, there wouldn't be any point in my saying it to you. Normally, of course, we start the program to give you a chance to tune in with a little bit of music. And it's a very nice piece of music we normally pick by Greg Brayton, and it's the instrumental version of his song Sally Sweet. Very good. And today, though, we changed the music. You may have noticed that. And we were playing Michelle by the Beatles, and there's a very good reason for that. It's because Doug Joffrey is our special guest from GW Micro, and it's your opportunity to call in and ask any questions you like of one of the founders of one of the leading screen reading companies. And what's that got to do with Doug Joffrey? Well, Michelle is the name of Doug and Claire's brand new daughter, born just last week. Doug, you know, welcome to the program. And there's only one thing I like talking about more than technology, and that's cute babies. So let's just find out how she's doing.
I didn't realize you dedicated the song to her there.
Yeah.
She is doing great. We're very happy. She was born on the 29th, so Good Friday, actually. And both mother and daughter are doing great.
That's wonderful. Well, you see, now that this whole baby thing, that's one piece of technology that is more advanced than WindowWise. Don't you think it's just so miraculous when they all come out in one piece?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
The way that they come out. It truly is God's gift. So we are very blessed with two children.
Yeah.
And we even hope to have maybe some more.
Well, congratulations. That is just fantastic. Anyway, we'll talk to you, W Micro. I should give the number. If people would like to give us a call, you're welcome to phone in at any time. I'm sure there'll be many people who have questions or comments. And to get in touch, use area code 212 in the United States, 812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. When you're asked for a conference code, courtesy of spiderphone.com, the number is 0480-5512, and you should see that in the title bar. You can push Control Shift T with Window Eyes and see it there. 0480-5512 is that conference code. Doug, Window Eyes Professional, it's out. That's been an incredibly labor-intensive exercise for you guys. How's it being received?
It's actually being very well received. This has been our biggest upgrade, or we call it a migration, basically. But of all the releases that we've come out with, this has by far been the most responded to, the most exciting for people to be able to finally have access to Windows 2000, Windows XP. So we're finally covering all the operating systems, the major operating systems that are out there anyway. So we're very excited to get this guy out there.
What was the story with the patch that people were sent?
Well, what happened, it's rather embarrassing, but I'm not sure which patch you're referring to, the official release patch or the Beta 3 that we came out with.
Well, everybody's come out with everybody's received a CD who received the original CD, is that right?
Right. What happened with that one is, I was thinking that you might have been referring to when we had the public Beta 2 out, it timed out.
Right.
And in order to keep people going before they received their CDs, we put out a Beta 3. But what you're referring to is, we sent out our official release of 4.2, Window Eyes Professional, and unfortunately the standard version of Window Eyes Professional, not the standard Window Eyes and not the copy-protected versions that we also sell, but the unprotected standard Window Eyes 4.2 Professional CD unfortunately had the wrong version of Window Eyes on it, which timed out. So it timed out just like the beta timed out, meaning that people that were running it all of a sudden, I forget the exact date, but a couple weeks ago, all of a sudden just turned right into a demo, which was not very good. So we immediately put out a patch that same day that we found out about it. I believe it was last Monday. So as soon as we found out about it, we scrambled real quickly to find out exactly what the problem was and put up a patch that you could download to replace your copy of Window Eyes with the correct version. And then we also sent out second day air to everyone that we had already sent the CD to, the bad CD. We immediately sent out second day air a replacement CD. And those have all gone out, so we're all back, caught up again. And I believe that we're now just about 1 week behind on standard orders, but at least everybody that got the bad CD now has the correct CD, and the patch got them going in that interim time between now and then. And that was very embarrassing. We definitely apologize to everyone that got caught in that, but at least we were able to resolve that as quickly as possible.
You have a deal going for existing users of Window Eyes to upgrade to Professional if they need to. Can you explain how that works and how long it lasts for?
Sure. Anyone that has the current version of Window Eyes, current prior to our 4.2, which was version, actually any version 4.1 or 4.11, because the 4.1 to 4.11 was a free upgrade anyway that you could download. But if you had either of those two versions, for 60 days from the release date of Window Eyes Professional, which was March 11th, from 60 days from that date, you can migrate up to the Professional version for $200 or use two of your SMA counts. A typical SMA will give you three hits for upgrades. If you use, you can choose to use two of those counts, or you can pay $200, and that's good for 60 days from March 11th, whatever that equates to in 60 days. And after the 60 days, you no longer can use your SMA, and the price goes up to $250 to migrate, and that cost will remain consistent. The reason we did that is because the price difference between the standard and the professional is exactly $200, and we felt that it wasn't fair to penalize those people that didn't have the option of getting the professional version in the past. We didn't want to penalize them. So what we're doing then is giving them a 60-day grace period to be able to go up to the professional version and be able to use all the functionality of that.
Some people have said, well, why is there a professional Window Eyes at all? Why isn't there just one product that supports all of the operating systems to make it fair and affordable for everybody?
Well, of course, the professional version does cover all of that. But what we wanted to be able to do is, first of all, there was a tremendous amount of development time in getting the 2000 and the XP product going. We originally had sites to get out the 2000 product way back. And then all of a sudden, Microsoft, of course, released XP on us. And so we felt, well, we can't just continue only on the path of 2000. We need to make sure that XP works as well. So we quickly scrambled, got all of that working to come out with it. But again, it took a long development period to be able to do that. So, I mean, obviously we've got to recoup that development cost that's in there. But we didn't want to also penalize the people that don't necessarily need the advantage of 2000 or XP. So what we did was we kept the standard version, which we're now calling standard, WindowEyes, and we kept that price at $595. That's still very low when you look at the other screen readers that are out there. So if you're only interested in 95, 98, or Millennium, then stick with WindowEyes standard. You don't have to pay extra for the 2000 XP support that you may never, ever use. But then there are obviously those people that do need that additional support. And so we charge $795 for the professional, which gives you everything standard does, but also gives you the 2000 and XP support. And we don't care if you're running XP Home Edition or XP Professional. It's the same price. It's all covered. Because basically XP Home and XP Professional are identical as far as we're concerned. So we wanted to not necessarily even have a third layer where you have XP Professional or something even higher yet. But even at $795, you'll find that it is one of the least expensive screen readers that is out there. So we're still proud of keeping the price down.
And you're confident that you'll be able to maintain feature sets between the standard and professional versions?
Keep the what, I'm sorry?
Maintain the feature sets the same between the standard and the professional versions from now on when you release new versions of the product.
Exactly. And actually, that's been a concern of a lot of users on our list. We've seen a lot of people concerned that all of a sudden all of our emphasis is now on 2000 and XP. And I try to say in many emails, and I hope that people at least on our list are now understanding what our philosophy is on this. But what I said, and I think people misinterpreted that a while back, was that we're putting all of our emphasis in getting out the 2000 and XP version of WindowEyes because we didn't support it. We had nothing for 2000 users and Windows XP users. We had to get that going. So we put all of our guns and everything into getting out WindowEyes Professional. But that didn't mean that we were turning our backs to the 9X and Millennium because they share the same code base. So all of the new functionality that you get with Professional, you get in the standard version as well. So anytime we add a feature for one or the other, it's going to go in the other product, unless there's something specific to the operating system, like Windows XP has fast user switching. Well, we had to do some things to work better under fast user switching, which isn't supported under any of the other OSs. So in that case, yes, it's specific to XP. But our multi-user service that we added, our flash support under IE, that's covered across the board from 95 to XP Professional. So we're not going to specifically put in features for an operating system unless that feature is only applicable in that operating system.
Makes sense. You know, I've been quite interested. You've had a couple of pretty major coups in recent times. One was the getting to market first with the Adobe Acrobat support. And more recently, you've got support in there already for the Macromedia Flash 6. And I was staggered when I started using this and they contacted me from Macromedia to do a main menu piece and said, have a look at this. I just could not believe how much web content we were missing out on before. You just didn't even know it existed. And then now with the WindowEyes 4.2 and the Flash 6, suddenly there's all this extra web content out there.
That's exactly right, because as you said, most people that would go to a web page didn't even have, unless the page were completely blank, they didn't have a clue that they were missing some section of that web page. And it's been very nice that Macromedia has come to us, and because we have MSA support in WindowEyes, that's the way that we support IE, Internet Explorer, and that's the only way that they can expose their content. And so it kind of made a perfect match for us to be able to work with them through MSAA to be able to get that Flash content. And it's just a start. We've got all kind of neat things planned. Macromedia is going to do some very nice things. So this is a start because the legacy Flash code still may have some problems. You'll have better access than you did, but it still may have some problems, just as old web pages had problems. And as time went on, developers became educated on accessibility. As tools came out and automatically gave the developer accessibility without them even realizing it, things became more and more accessible, and that's what we expect with Flash as well. But Macromedia is just one of those companies. As you mentioned, Adobe came to us, and we helped them be able to expose their information through MSAA. We've got a lot more large, huge companies, actually, that you'll be seeing some press releases from very soon of mergers, but partnerships, rather, of us working with their companies hand-in-hand to make sure that their products are accessible. And so we're going to start seeing a lot more of these larger companies that are coming to us because we're willing to work with them and to be able to help their developers. It's amazing how much time we actually spent with Adobe, because a lot of this MSA is very unknown to these main street manufacturers that are out there developing all these mainstream products. They don't know how to implement MSAA, and so they come to someone like us who knows how to receive it and work with them to be able to develop it better. And as I said, you're just going to see more and more of these companies coming.
It seems to me that even in the assistive technology industry, you have an influence that's disproportionate to your size. You've got a great product, and that's what's put you where you are. What is it, do you think, about GW Micro that makes these firms come to you and work with you so extensively?
Well, one thing is we've stayed very focused. We don't feel we can be experts in large print, in braille display manufacturers, in OCR packages and everything. We can't. I don't personally feel that one company can be experts in all of those fields, not be really good at it anyway. And so what we feel is we need to stay very focused on screen reading products. So we don't need necessarily the huge overhead to be able to cover the whole gamut of products that would be available for a blind person. And by staying focused on that, we can be very lean, and we are an extremely lean company. Our developers are extremely knowledgeable of the area. Our tech support people also do development work and vice versa and things. So we have that knowledge, and we communicate it, and we're open to these companies. We don't charge these companies. If they give us money, that's great. But we want to work with them. We want to get these products out. So we don't turn our backs to them if they say, look, we don't have a budget, but we need to get this product going. We'll say, great, all we want is a press release or some acknowledgement that we've helped you, and that's really all we've asked for a lot of these companies that are out there. So we are willing to work with them. It's becoming a little bit more difficult because so many of them are coming to us because we are willing to talk with them and work with them. But we feel that we can keep up and, again, just get a little bit leaner and just work a little bit harder.
We're speaking with Doug Geoffrey of GW Micro, and you can give us a call on area code 212-812-2800, and the conference code, courtesy of Spiderphone, is 0480-5512. You'll see that in the title bar of your media player. And area code 541 has done just that. Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, Doug, and good evening, Jonathan. This is Stan. I've been using WindowEyes for a great long time, in fact, way back when 3.1 was out there. But I must tell you, one of the things I was very impressed with is that I purchased a CD-ROM burner. And all of a sudden I found out that it was a Nero CD-ROM burner, and you folks had announced that you folks were working with that company. And I must tell you, that works just wonderfully with WindowEyes.
Well, I appreciate it, because that's actually another one of the companies. It's a smaller company. But I believe it was might have been Aaron Smith or Mike Lawler at the office noticed that there were some problems with one of the releases or a beta release that they had. And so we contact them, as we do many companies, and some just totally ignore the email. Some tell us, well, we're thinking about it. Nero came back and said, great, tell us what to do. And so we gave them some suggestions. They implemented them extremely fast, and I love it when companies actually do that, as they did. And it produced a very accessible product, as you see. So we're very happy that they are willing to listen.
And I'm just going to let someone else get on the line, but I want to say just keep up the good work, and certainly as long as that happens, you guys will get plenty of support from a lot of us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Stan. Okay. Someone's going to ask this if I don't. Have you had any contact with Real Networks over Real One? Presumably your support networks have been going hot over that particular product.
Yes, we have. Some of the companies I have to be careful because we've signed non-disclosure agreements with, but we have not with them, so I guess I can talk as freely as I want with them. We've actually contacted them a couple times, and they started out a little bit slow, but they then saw the light and realized, wait a minute, we just put out a version that's totally inaccessible. We've gone backwards, and they did. So their engineers have contacted us. I'm basically kind of working between their engineers and our engineers, And we've just done that, I believe, Friday. We just had another conference call, and we worked with them. Monday we're going to have another one set up with them. So they are implementing MFAA within their code to be able to expose their controls in a standard fashion, because right now it's basically dead. It's not very usable at all. So we, again, are working with them to try to get this product better. And I think you said that I think they do have something coming up with you. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're coming up on this week's main menu to answer some questions, shall we say. I mean, we've just had so much email about Real One that their PR people actually were extremely responsive in saying, yeah, we'll come on and sort of front up to the blind community.
Good, good. Obviously, they wouldn't be doing that if they didn't feel comfortable with where they're going. And they are going in a very good path now. So I think it's going to take a little bit of time to get the product out, but they are very serious about it now. And the good thing is once they do this big step, is that it will just flow from release to release now. So I think they're finally taking it serious, as they should, and we'll see some really good stuff coming out very soon.
One thing I've noticed that intrigues me about off-screen models is that you run one particular screen reader and you get virtually nothing with some programs. You know, where there are some inaccessible programs, you might get almost a blank-looking screen, and you run another screen reader, and the same program does work to a fashion. In the case of Real One, WindowEyes actually is giving you at least access to the install screen, so you can see that information is there. Do you take particular care with the design of your off-screen model to try and make sure that that's more often the case than not?
Well, we spend a tremendous amount of time on our off-screen model, and I don't think anybody, I think if a company tells you that their off-screen model is 100% accurate all the time, they're just flat lying to you, because it's almost impossible to keep it accurate for every application under every operating system. It's quite a job, because for every technique we can do, I can write something that would break it, and I think there are people out there specifically trying to do that, it seems like. But so, yes, we spend a tremendous amount of time, and as we see things, we'll do whatever we can to resolve that. And there are cases, some applications are so obscure that we do have to special case them. If it's a major product, we will do that. Otherwise, we try to come up with as generic a solution as possible, because obviously we can't go in and specifically write code for this application and that application or whatever. And so this is just an ongoing, ever since we released in 95, it's just ongoing trying to keep this off-screen model in sync with what's really going on the screen.
We're going to have some WindowEyes users who are tuned in who don't know what an off-screen model is. Can you talk us through what an off-screen model is and why it's so important?
Sure. Back in the old, I'll back up a little bit, but back in the old DOS days, a screen reader, of course, as I was developing Vocalize back then, of course, I thought it was very complicated, but I'd love to go back to those days now. But back in the old DOS days, if you needed access to the contents of the screen, what was actually up on the screen, you could go to the hardware, the video card, basically, and pull that information off. And you would get every character on that typically 80 characters by 25 lines. You could go at any one of those cells, character positions, and pull the character off. So it made it very easy to get what's actually being displayed on the screen. And, of course, you didn't have to deal with graphics. It was just text. So it was guaranteed. In that case, you could say your off-screen model was 100% because you're pulling it from the video card and it's just text. But under Windows, of course, you don't have this pretty 80 by 25 grid anymore, and characters aren't always the same spacing, and you have graphics thrown in. So we needed some way, because we can't go to the video card and pull off what's there, because if we do, we'll get a dot, basically. Instead of going and getting a character off the screen like you did in DOS, you go and you get pixels, graphics, because you're in a graphic mode. Even though it may look like a W on the screen, it's just really a series of dots that form a W on the screen. So you have two options, and I've never seen anybody take the second option. But the first option is you capture the information as the application or the operating system is putting it to the screen. You capture that information, and you store it in what we call an off-screen model, basically an off-screen version of what you're visually looking at. And the other option would be to, okay, if you don't want to capture it as it goes to the screen, since it's graphics, why not do what OCR packages are doing and try to do some OCR work on it? But I don't believe that that's ever going to be possible, just because the overhead of trying to pull it in and doing the OCR, the optical character recognition on it, to try to convert that pretty little graphical representation of a W and convert it to a W, it's not possible necessarily, at least in today's computers, to do that in real time. So We are intercepting everything as the operating system or applications put text, as they put graphics, whatever, up to the screen. Because an application will put text to the screen. It says, okay, operating system, here's a line that says this is a test. Put it up at this position. So the operating system will take it, convert it to pixels, a graphic, and then put it up on the screen. So if we catch it at the right time, we can see, okay, instead of graphics, it's now text, and we can keep that exact information where we want. And then we also intercept the graphics that are going up there as well and store that in our off-screen model. The problem comes in is where it becomes, and there's a million cases of this, but one simple example of what makes this so difficult, because that in itself doesn't sound all that hard, is let's say that you've got this W up on the screen, and you do something that causes another a dialogue to pop up on the foreground of the screen. And let's say that that dialogue cuts off the left half of the W. So I can visually see the right half of the W, but the left half is gone. So when that dialogue goes away, the operating system just draws the left half of the W. So then what do? Do we represent a half a W up there or what? And so things like that become very difficult. Because, again, under DOS, if a character were there, it was 100% there. Under Windows, it might be 100% there, it might be 90%, it might be 10%, it might be 5%. At what point do you consider it not there or whatever? And those things just become very difficult, especially if you're using an application that's constantly changing the screen or scrolling around or whatever. That can make the job very, very difficult.
I always find it interesting when I go to some of these conventions and events and you sit down with people over a nice glass of Chardonnay or something, preferably a good New Zealand one, and people start having these amazingly eclectic conversations about the fact that screen readers in some cases aren't really reading the screen anymore. That, for example, when I go into Windows Explorer with Window Eyes, you're querying the list view control directly so that I can see everything, including the file size of the file and the date it was modified. That's not apparently what's on the screen. Similarly, of course, when you go into Internet Explorer, you're loading the web page into a buffer, so we're not interacting with the screen at all. And some people, you know, think this is dreadfully, dreadfully sinful. And for me, I guess, I'm not so much of a purist. I think, well, as long as I can get the best access to the information I can get. But then I suppose the other side of that argument is, well, for a support technician or somebody who's involved in a sighted workplace, they actually do need to know what's on the physical screen. So how do you compromise, come to a happy medium on those issues?
Well, it is difficult, and you're absolutely right. Back in the DOS days, again, a screen reader was the exact term because it could only read from the screen. It couldn't go off and query the application like we can under Windows. The nice thing of Windows is that they do use similar controls. A menu on WordPad is the same as a menu under Notepad or something. They're very similar type menus. So if you know how to work with one, you can work with the other. And you mentioned specifically a tree view or list views or whatever. Visually on the screen, a lot of times, you can't see all the information that's relevant because on a tree view, which is kind of a treeing mechanisms or a directory structure or whatever have you, a lot of times it becomes so deep that you don't see on the screen all the information. So we had a choice. Do we want to read just what's visible, which could be gibberish, or do we want to be able to read the entire information? A sighted person has the advantage of maybe taking the mouse and scrolling things horizontally to be able to see exactly where they are in that tree view, but it's not so easy if you're using a screen reader to do that. So we opted, in cases where we can, to go and specifically get the information, regardless of what's visible on the screen, what chunk of that is visible on the screen, read the entire thing to them. So as you're moving through the controls that we know how to handle specifically, we're going to go to that control and say what item is highlighted, and maybe what's the next level up and what's the next level up. So in a tree view, we can read you that whole tree all the way down to where you're at, even though you may not see most of that information on the screen. And in Internet Explorer, you mentioned as well, we do the same thing there basically. We go to IE and we say through MSAA, give us this entire web page, decolumnize it for us because you know how to do it. We can try to do it, but you know how to do it. Tell us if there's table information. Tell us if there's forms up there, controls, or if there's flash material on the web page. Give us all this information, and then we'll represent it to the user in our own interface, because IE's interface was specifically designed for a sighted person in mind. And you can use it that way if you want to, because we still keep this off-screen model. So if you really are a purist and you really want to know what's on the screen, you can use our mouse pointer to be able to move around on the screen and be able to see visually, audibly rather, what exactly is in what position. It's tedious, but if you really need to know where things are laid out, you can do it that way. But we feel as you're navigating within the controls itself that you're more interested in getting the information versus being a purist and knowing exactly, maybe there's only five characters of a 20-character string visible on the screen. We want to give you all that information that would have been highlighted if the window were wide enough or something.
We've got a couple of calls banking up, so let's go to the first one, area code 812. You're speaking with Doug Joffrey.
Hello, it's Michael Loft in Evansville, Indiana. I, not too far from Fort Wayne. I had three different questions. One, zone alarm. Zone Labs, I'm curious if you're working with that company. I have a lot of issues with WindowEyes not responding when using that application, and I'm curious, maybe there's something better I could use. Maybe I'm misinformed. I believe it to be a great program. Or am I unique? Is this something you hear much about?
Absolutely. That's been a very hot topic on our list, which is made, which I might also recommend that people who have questions on specific software like this join our GW-Info list, because topics like this come up all the time. They resurface from time to time as well, which is good. But specifically, this one's been a hot topic for a while because I don't know version numbers because I don't use Zone Alarm anymore. I did, but I don't now. Is that their latest version, as I understand it, became very inaccessible, very much like the real audio.
You do have to do a little more mousing around. I don't have a problem with that. It just seems to be related to audio applications, doing things that many people may not try to do. But
yeah,
there are parts of it I don't think that are fully usable, and things I think that go off the screen, as you were talking about, where you know someone sighted may be able to scroll it over and capture it.
That's right.
But another issue, I think it was beta 1 of 4.11. For some reason, that particular application did exceptional with graphics labeling, and I thought this was discussed at the time that that had to be drawn back a little bit. There were some issues with stability, and stability is important, but I'm curious what's involved with that. If that is something you're looking at, can that be improved upon?
You're saying the graphics specifically in...
Right, in different applications, just being able to automatically label the text that would go with those graphics.
Using our auto-label feature?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we beefed that back up again in the 4.2 release. We went through and we sped that up, for one thing. But I'm not specifically aware of what you're referring to as far as how we backed off on that. I know that we had put in some code to speed that process up. It became unreliable at that point, so we backed it back off. But we put that technology back into 4.2, so it should be working well with 4.2.
Okay, I upgraded to 4.2, and there's a page. I thought, great, and I can read all the Flash content on it, but it keeps updating, refreshing every second. So obviously the MSAA keeps toggling back on, and we keep shutting it off, but it doesn't seem to matter. And 10 or 15 hits, I can get that resolved, but...
Well, what's happening with that is, and this, again, is because we're kind of in the early stages of the Flash. I think we made a bad decision, and our next release we will reverse this. What's happening to you is that Flash is dynamic. It's almost always, it doesn't have to be, but it almost always is changing information on the screen to you. And so as it changes, Flash comes up to us and says, hey, I've changed the page. Here's the new one. And so WindowEyes goes out and reloads the new page, so you're current. Now, 99% of the time, that's garbage that you don't care about anyway. It's usually an ad or something that's flashing around. So you can, by pressing Alt-Shift-M, you can toggle the flash events off so that WindowEyes will not reload. And that will stay off as long as WindowEyes is running until you turn it on or restart WindowEyes. So the default of that is on. And I think our mistake was we should have defaulted that to off. And we probably will on our next release. But the way to turn it off is just do an Alt-Shift-M, and then we will not reload any Flash page.
Excellent. Well, keep up the good work. We'll be upgrading to XP and excited to get and play in that OS.
Great. Thank you very
Thanks, Michael.
Thank
good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks. See you later. There you go. We're speaking with Doug Joffrey, and let's go right on with the calls. If you want to give us a call, it's area code 212-812-2800, and the conference code, courtesy of our friends at Spiderphone, is 0480-5512. Hi, area code 631.
Hello, Jonathan. Good evening, Mr. Geoffrey. Richard Costa.
Hi, Richard.
Hi. How are you doing, Jonathan?
I'm good.
I guess my question was, a while back ago, there was on one of the pages, on one of the email lists, about the video chaining issue, and haven't heard too much about that, and that was like maybe a couple of months ago. So what exactly has been happening, because I know it's not just with the windowized drawers, also has it's related, especially if you were running drawers and windowized, or even still. So what exactly has been happening with that?
Right, you're referring to an email that I put out that kind of described what the problems are with adaptive applications coexisting. In the earlier days, pre Windows 2000 and XP. You had those hassles, they weren't as bad, but let's say you had multiple screen readers, or you had an OCR package with this and a large print and a whatever, you had all these things.
Right.
It became difficult to make them all coexist. But it could be done under 9X or Millennium. Then with 2000 and XP, because of the way that we have to create our off-screen model, Microsoft only gave us one option, and it's not a sanctioned option, because it's not documented, it's not really well designed by Microsoft. The way
right, and I understand the way you described it. It's almost like you have to hack into the. It's not a real seamless way of coexisting with the video driver. You actually, in a sense, have to hack into it to get the actual information that you need.
Yeah, in a sense, what we're doing is we're adding our own video driver, so that when an application says display this to the screen, it first comes to our video driver, and we intercept it and tuck it away in our off-screen model, and then we pass it along to the next video driver, which hopefully is the display, and then it goes up on the screen. And in a nice situation where we're the only ones in there with your hardware video card, that works flawlessly. But then let's say all of a sudden you install another application that does the same thing we're doing. Well, because there's no way to necessarily chain directly in, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll either block us out. The next one that installs will either cut us out completely, or it'll cut out your hardware video card, which means now
right.
You go into VGA mode, and nothing
right.
works. And the same problem is, even if you get all that to coexist, when you uninstall, if you uninstall in the wrong order, you pull a video card, video driver out of the middle of that chain, and now it doesn't know how to communicate, and again, you're back in VGA mode with no speech, and it's just a nightmare to be able to keep all of this stuff working. So we have procedures today that you can be very cautious and make sure that you install applications in the right order and you uninstall them in reverse order. And so you can kind of get it to work, but it's a lot of bother. Mm. And if you have remote applications out there, like PC Anywhere or some of these applications, they do the same thing, and they're general market products. And so we're fighting with them as they're fighting with us.
Yeah, and then you're also talking about other things, like maybe other sound cards that somehow have their own drivers, and that whole interplay too can really cause a lot of problems.
Well, you might have those other conflicts, but typically on the sound card end, things usually coexist nicely. But it's the video part that kills us the most. And so what we did was we went out to Microsoft a while back to work on porting into Windows XP, because we worked with some of their engineers to try to come up with things and gave them suggestions and things and showed them problems that we're having. So hopefully they can resolve these. But one thing we determined was, hey, this just can't continue this way because of this video chaining business. So we really pushed them to say, we need to come up with something better. So several companies like us got together with Microsoft that do this video chaining business, and instead of each of us doing our own hacking in there and breaking everybody just so we can get in there, let's try to coexist. So we're all working kind of closely to come up with this new standard that we can all coexist, so that there's this chaining specific API, this application programming interface, that we can go in and say, oh, there's another application in there already. Well, let's just add ourselves to the chain in a nice fashion, because everybody knows everybody there, as opposed to our hacking technique. So we're working on this. We've kind of got this committee that's working together with Microsoft. Excuse me. We're trying to decide where this is going to go as far as when we're done with it, who owns it, who's going to take the technology to the next level, and that's kind of some things that's stalling it out at the moment. But it's definitely going to happen. We're probably a month or two away before it actually comes out to the public. But it will allow us to coexist with these other applications. Then Microsoft is going to evangelize this off to the other mainstream manufacturers, like the PC Anywheres, and even within their own development phase, like NetMeeting, things like that, to do the same thing.
So yeah, and it also maybe might help us in the issues of getting access to maybe some of the DVD players, and that's what I would think would probably help us, too.
Well, actually, with the DVD players, that's just using, like, DirectX and things, and WindowEye should be compatible with that now. We've got people that are using DVDs. With WindowEye.
Yeah, I believe that one's not a WindowEye's issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good on you. Well, always good to get your questions, Richard. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're speaking with Doug Joffrey of GW Micro. You know, Doug, MSAA, Microsoft Active Accessibility, is not quite the panacea I originally thought it was. When MSAA came on the scene, I guess I had this vision that once a product chose to support it and adopt it, and goodness knows, outside of Microsoft, it's taken a few years for that to take hold, that would be it, that screen readers would just work with an application if the application had MSAA in it. But it seems to me that every time a standard application chooses to adopt MSAA, you guys still have to somehow fit WindowEye to somehow specifically handle any given application.
That's exactly right, and it's sort of like, I don't remember exactly when this was, but when I had a device when I went overseas, I had this nice plug that I could plug anywhere in the United States,
yes.
And I could plug it in, and I went over someplace in the UK, and it wouldn't fit, but it's a standard plug, I thought, it wouldn't fit, so I needed a little adapter that would take it and put it in there, and to some extent, that's what's happening with MSAA, is that electricity is a standard. But people choose to implement it a little bit differently. They might, there's no definite way of being able to, how to handle, let's say, electricity. And the same is true with MSAA, is that although the standard is there, the developers have, in my opinion, a little bit too much leeway on ways that they can implement it. And so, although technically they're using MSAA, we need an adapter in some cases to be able to conform it into the standard way, or at least what we're trying to come up with, a standard way of doing that. Even within Microsoft, when MSA was first released, it took them a long time to, and they're still working on it, to consistently implement MSAA between the departments. The people that wrote the main desktop, the start menu, that's being exposed through MSAA, the start menu option. Well, they developed that completely different than, let's say, the Office product in their menu bar, which also is exposing their information through MSA, they did it completely different. And here you've got the same company exposing it through MSA, but using two different techniques. And so we're trying to get Microsoft to correct their documentation, try to get them down a little bit more so that there's less ambiguity in how to actually implement MSA. And that's where these companies are starting to come to us as well, because they're actually seeing that in the documentation, what little there is on MSA right now. They're realizing, wait a minute, there's too much flexibility here. What am I supposed to do? And so they're coming to us so that we can guide them in the correct way. And we're not guiding them specifically so it only works with WindowEye. That is definitely not our goal. We want to make it as generic as possible so that it opens up to as many screen readers that support MSA as possible. And so we work with that. And it's getting better. It's getting better with each release of the operating system, and as application developers and Microsoft become more educated in all of this, it is getting better. But it's not going to be a panacea of where, you know, you were thinking that everything is just going to work. Maybe someday, but it's still going to be some work to be able to implement this all consistently throughout every application.
What impact is Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act in the U.S. having on the willingness of some of these companies that you're working with to come and talk to you? Is it becoming more of a panic issue now? You know, we've got to do this or we're going to lose out on lots of government procurement?
Without a doubt. I mean, that is what, I mean, I hate to say it, but in some sense it's good, but that is what's driving the majority of the companies. They've either been sued or they're going to be sued, or they're just in threat of losing their government licenses that they may have if they don't comply. And so that's why we're starting to see a lot of these companies come to us, because they are frantically trying to get this going. some have been working with a long time, and they're definitely have gotten into the phase way in time. But there are others that, I won't name names, but some of them just recently that we've worked with that are just like squeezing in there to get this out in time for some government contract or something.
It's interesting.
It definitely has helped the community greatly, the 508, to be able to get these large companies to finally take a look at, hey, we've got to make these products accessible in a serious way.
Well, you've obviously invested quite a lot of time in getting WindowWise Professional to market, and so there have been a few new features, but largely you've been concentrating on making sure that XP and 2000 users can enjoy WindowWise. Presumably now that that's done, we're going to see lots of focus on additions to the feature set. Would that be right?
Absolutely. I mean, the core thing we had to do was get the operating systems out there. And on a consistent level. That was part of the thing that I talked about on our list as well, is that we weren't putting all of our emphasis in Windows 2000 and XP to make it better than our 9X and Millennium version. We wanted it to be on the same level because we felt, well, first of all, that's a good level because it's very stable and responsive. So we wanted to get everybody on the same level, and now as we add new features, functionality, all operating systems are going to get it for free as it goes into that. So, yes. Unless Microsoft comes up with another operating system tomorrow, which causes us to redirect and start working on that, we are definitely working on, and we've got some very, what I think are some spectacular things that are going to come out that are going to help greatly in being able to work WindowWise in a lot of these more difficult applications that may be out there to work with. So we've got a lot of things that are going to be coming out now that we can focus on these functionalities and features. And we're pretty excited about being able to finally get some really cool, new, very powerful features out there.
Can I twist your arm a bit to talk specifically about some of the coolness that we can expect?
I was trying to be as generic as possible. Because
I know.
I don't really want to talk specifically about some of them. I can mention one of them because this has been asked of us a lot, and it is a concern of a lot of people, and that is the Office support. To be able to work with, let's say, PowerPoint and maybe be able to handle charts and things in Excel and be able to do some special things inside Word and things like that. So that will certainly be one of our big issues. Some of the functionality that we're adding in general might give us some of that stuff for free, and we will still have to go in and kind of supplement that as well. But that's one big thing that we want to look at. Another thing a little bit further down the road, maybe not too far, I hope, is also Java support. That's been asked of us a lot. One thing with GW Micro is our philosophy, we've tried to stay true to this, and I believe we have, is to stay very focused on the path that we take. And we don't specifically go out there and add functionality for something half-baked just so we can say that it's out there. And we see this in our competitors a lot, where they'll go out and they'll put something out that sort of works enough that they can say that they support it. Maybe they'll come out with a patch with it later. Maybe they won't because they feel that there's enough support there. And it's just enough to say that they're compliant and they've got it. But they don't go and really do it the way that it should be done. And that's the way that we are. We were last to come out with Braille display support. But I feel that our support is superior than our competitors out there as far as our Braille support, the functionality of it and everything. Because we stepped back, we did research, we talked to key people in the industry that work with Braille displays, that prefer Braille only, over speech even, and come up with this interface to be able to support that. And that's exactly what we would do with Java support, Office support, and some of these other things we're working with to make sure that we do it right. It might take us a little longer, but it's going to be darn good when it comes out, and it's going to do exactly what we say it does when it comes out, and we're not going to try to sneak one over on the user just to get enough out there so we can start hyping about it.
The flip side of that, I suppose, though, is that some people need that kind of support yesterday, and in fact are driven reluctantly to the competition because they can't afford the luxury because of their work commitments to wait.
That's definitely a balance, and within reason, we may have to quickly go over there and do something or whatever. Within reason, we'll do that. But I still feel very strongly that you've got to have a core, strong, stable base to be able to build from. And as time goes on, and I think I'm saying this, as time goes on, if you don't have that, you'll start to see things crumble. You'll start to see releases that have major regressions in them because they didn't do that, because they're trying to too quickly get out, you'll see releases that go out and they don't care about any other adaptive application out there. They just want to get them working because they've got to do it, but they break everybody else. And yeah, that might get them out there, and that might make a few people be able to get access to something they couldn't have otherwise had, and which they needed at that point. But it also shut down a lot of people because of the arrogance of going out there and realizing that, hey, there are other things we've got to coexist with. We've got to do some other things. And so it's always a very fine line. And we've kind of taken the more conservative route to where we feel that we need to make sure that we keep as many options open as possible, keep it as stable as possible. We don't want this thing to collapse in on us.
What's your view on some sort of macro language for WindowEyes? I mean, I know right back to the Vocalize days, and I think I picked up Vocalize at 1.0. You know, the whole no macros thing was very much a marketing angle that you took and still take in terms of WindowEyes. When you go onto the website, you see, you know, no complicated scripts to learn, and yet there is some flexibility in a macro-type system that can't be had any other way. Do you think there'd ever come a time when you will give users some macro functionality?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I still feel very strongly with the way that we have it now, and if we did anything with that, we certainly wouldn't make what we currently have, our current interface, suffer, because a typical user can do many more things with WindowEyes than they can do with some of our competitors because they're much more complicated. And so we certainly want to keep that ease of useness, that's a word, available to the user. But we also realize that there are some very ill-behaved applications out there, and maybe you have to totally rewrite their interface. WindowEyes has the power to be able to do that. It just can't easily expose that to the user today. So we feel that, yes, that will be coming, and that's something, again, where we want to step back. We want to look at it. We want to do it really well and do it right. And so, yes, that's something you will see on the horizon.
Well, one thing that we miss in most Windows screen readers these days, even those that have macro functionality, is a good old-fashioned macro recorder where you can, you know, take a mouse and move it to a certain place and click and then play that thing back and assign it to a keystroke.
That's right. You don't necessarily need a fully complicated scripting language. Maybe that's useful. Certainly is in some cases. But you're right, just plain macro recorder or something. Back in the old DOS days, I think those were very popular, to be able to record keystrokes and just do things around or whatever. So, yes, that may be the first step. It may be a subset of the full picture. So that's definitely something that we're considering, because we do feel that that is a very powerful thing as well. We sort of have that. People have kind of taken our cursoring keys that we offer, which allows you to do two commands, but some people have kind of taken that into a macro approach, which it wasn't designed for. So we know that that's something that we need to do, and we will be addressing that.
Yes, I think one of the most exciting things with the cursoring keys is the execute hotkey function, because if you can combine that, those two functions, a cursor key with an execute hotkey, it's really quite amazing what you can do. You know, you use a user window to define a particular part of the screen, and a lot can be done.
That's right, that's right. But, of course, we kind of right now we limit you to two things. But if we could open that up, and it would be relatively simple to do that, we could just all of a sudden allow you to do many keystrokes. So it's not that WindowEyes doesn't necessarily give you accessibility to some of these real ill-behaved applications. It's that it may take you a lot of work to be able to move the mouse around or whatever to get to the point that you want to do. And so you want to obviously streamline that as easily, so you can get to that application and be able to manipulate it as easily as possible. So we need to combine all of these complicated functions, keystrokes, movements, whatever, into one command or something. And so that macro recorder would go a long way in helping those types of applications.
One of the questions, let me just remind people that if you'd like to give Doug a call and ask him all those curly questions you've always wanted, it's area code 212-812-2800, and the conference code, courtesy of Spiderphone, is 0480-5512, and you should see that in your title bar. One of the things I get asked a lot by people who, you know, listen to Main Menu and ask things is, how is it that screen reader vendors determine what constitutes a priority, that you will insert problem A or request A ahead of request B? What is it that influences that?
Well, it's an extremely difficult task to do, because no matter what we pick as our next priority, we're going to make this group extremely happy, but we're going to make this group over here extremely upset. And we've always had that. I think we'll always will have that. What we typically do is we go by the feedback that we see and hear from people. So we just went to CSUN. There were several things that we heard back from those users, and so that will help us prioritize. We see on our list, we see some users calling in on the show, we see all of this information that comes to us. We kind of collate all that from our sales group, from our resellers, what's important to users out there. A lot of times we see what people are asking is more of a buzz thing to ask than what's really necessary. I'm trying to think of some examples of that. Back in the older days, as we were coming up with things, people would ask for this functionality, and you would sit there and say, well, do you need that? And they would say, no, but that's what I was told to ask. And so we have to be careful of that as well, because we want to make sure that what we're doing, because we have limited resources, what we're doing will definitely benefit the most number of users. But we also have little things that we feel we've got to look at the big things, and we've got to look at the little things, and we've got to look at little bug fixes and things like that. So within our development staff, we've got people that go off on the long-term projects. We've got people that will do the quick and dirty things. We've got people that just fix bugs and do things like that. And so we kind of keep all of this going at once. So even though we might release something quicker than another, it doesn't mean we're not working on that other thing. It just means that the other resources we had were, as we were kind of multitasking on all of this, got that job done faster. So some people ask us, why on earth did you put out this feature when we're all asking for this? And that's why, because we're still working on that other feature, but we happen to also be working on this and released it first. So it's just a very fine balance of trying to make everybody happy at once, because when you consider what a screen reader has to do, it's mind-boggling. I mean, we've got to work with everything out in the world under Windows, and it's just mind-boggling. As I said, I could easily write something that would break every screen reader out there, and yet we've got to work with that. So we just got to come up with something that can make the most number of people happy at once. A good example, too, is Java support. We've been asked for that for a long time, but in the past, there really wasn't a lot of major Java applications out there that were really being used. So what's the point of having it at that point if there's a very small number of applications that really support it? Now that is changing. Oracle's come out with a lot of applications. There's a lot of other big companies out there that are coming out with Java applications. So that has moved up on our priority list because of its need that's out there. Not necessarily because of the buzz, and that's what our competitors push, so that's what people think they need to ask from us. It's, you know, not because they want to use it, but because that's the thing they were told to ask. So it's a very difficult task, and that, unfortunately, is my job to try to coordinate all of that. And that's a full-time job just in itself, is to keep our development staff going and trying to prioritize things best we can to make the most number of people happy we can.
GW Micro has a very good reputation for being out there on the email. It runs its own email list, and quite often we'll see you and certainly Mike, who posts a lot there, answering questions and patiently talking users through perhaps why an issue has been given priority over another and answering support questions. And every so often I hear from people saying, well, that's very nice and it makes us feel good, but all of that time that you could be spending getting bogged down on email could equally be spent writing more code. Do you find that that's a balancing act, that email is sort of something that can drag you down quite a bit into hours of answering questions that really aren't that necessary?
It really is, but again, that's something that you have to do. That's part of the job. You've got to be able to articulate to users your reasoning behind some of this information, what's your philosophies, what you're doing, because that's part of the product. And so we try to express that to our users, and you're right. All of our tech support monitor our list, our GW-info list. I'm reading every single message that comes through that, and that's a lot at times. Prior to our release, our public betas and things, we're getting pounded with email messages. I still have literally 1,000 emails in my inbox of things that I need to go back to and address and prioritize. People would send, hey, this little bug, I have to prioritize that. First of all, verify that it's a bug, then put it in as far as when we think we can get to it and all of that. So I keep all of that information that's sent to me. So even though I don't necessarily respond immediately to all of these messages, because it is mind-boggling and I could spend all day just emailing back to people, we do keep that information. And a lot of people, times, some people will say, nobody's listening to me, nobody responded. Believe me, we're keeping that information. It's a lot of times, though, when this information goes out on the list, we kind of sit back and see if other people have comments. We want to know if there's this person that says, this is blowing up on me every time. we wait a little bit. Is anybody else saying, yes, we're also having that, or is everybody else saying, no, we're not having that problem? Well, that kind of helps us. So we don't always respond immediately, but if it's important enough, or we feel that it's more of a philosophy or a, maybe a higher management type question, then I'll kick in and do something as far as kind of showing people where we're going with things. Because I'm a consumer as well, and I get frustrated when I buy something and I don't have a clue what's going on with the company. Are they listening to me? Where are they going? We use products for our development, and I get very frustrated with those companies when I have a bug of theirs and they're not responding to me. I mean, there's so many companies that don't acknowledge any of these problems. And even when you call them up and they, you know, they just don't acknowledge these things, and, or you know more than them when you call tech support or you're on
yes.
the list. It's just so frustrating.
It is.
So we do our best to balance that.
It is frustrating, and it's so common these days to call somebody and get someone who is really only trained in rudimentary issues, and it's not really technical support at all. It's almost like they can cope if you are making a human error in using their product. But when you go further and you've got a legitimate conflict somewhere in your system and an item that needs to be resolved, basically they're out of their depth and they're more likely to just say, well, you know, we can't help, or it's some sort of human error at your end. And that's the difference, I think, that why GW Micro has particular respect in the support area, that you can actually phone your number and get a developer if the problem warrants that.
Exactly, right. I mean, when you call our phone number, you don't get voicemail, first of all, and you get tech support. You don't get the sales department, which transfers you to tech support. We work the other way around. We feel that tech support is the number one thing that we need to do. Sales is second. Some people might argue with that, but we'd rather transfer you off to the sales department and let a tech support person answer that phone. So these users are very, our tech support individuals are extremely knowledgeable of the product, very good, and as you mentioned, they monitor all the lists and they can respond at any time. I mean, we'll see weekend responses. I just checked in before I called you. I saw that there were responses from some of our tech support on our GW Info list. So you're going to get it who knows when.
Can I ask what kind of an impact, in terms of a change of culture in this marketplace, Freedom Scientific has had? Because, you know, it seems to me that before Freedom Scientific, there was generally, with the exception of a couple of upheavals from time to time, a good climate among small companies who were all in it for almost philanthropic reasons. I mean, they wanted to make a buck and pay their bills, but it wasn't a big computer corporate type culture. Has the emergence of such a large conglomerate like Freedom Scientific made a difference to the marketplace as a whole?
Well, it's definitely a question mark, and I'm still waiting to see how this pans out. I have my personal opinions, which I'd rather keep personal, on how I think this is going to work out. But I think that I don't necessarily think it's a good thing for the industry to have one giant organization out there that's basically trying to squeeze out all the other guys, because it's the other guys that make them as good as they are, for one thing. It gives the user choice, and I think that's extremely important out in the marketplace. No one screen reader is going to fit every individual's need, or Braille display, or OCR package, or screen enlarger. You need choice, and by having a large organization with lots of money to come in and start, we've already seen this in screen readers. How many screen readers have dropped off? And it's because they can't necessarily compete with that power out there. Luckily, WindowEyes is a good enough product that it can stand on its own and compete with this large organization based on its own merits. But if you don't have that strong user base when it's crucial time to have it, you could get squashed out. And I think that definitely is going to hurt the industry. We've seen this in some of the other organizations out there in the blindness community that have risen very large and began to topple because they can't necessarily sustain all of that. Right now they may be on the rise, but that rise is going to peak, and then what do you do? And I just in our industry it's completely different than in the general marketplace, and so it's a little bit scary on how things are going to actually pan out because of that. But I feel, personally, when they were smaller companies, we had much better communication between the companies. There wasn't as many conflicting companies. For instance, we only deal with the screen reader. So we can talk to all the Braille manufacturers and have no conflict, and they're willing to work with us. They want us to work with them. But now all of a sudden, you've got a company developing Braille displays that also develops a major competing product. So are they as willing to do that type of thing? And those are questions that we all have to think about of how that's going to pan out. Because some of the Braille display manufacturers we have excellent representation from on their end, others we don't. And this is going to be true as we go around in all these phases of these products that we have to deal with.
So I personally
liked it when they were smaller companies and we had a much better communication going.
Are you finding, in fact, that is the case then, that, let's say, for example, Freedom Scientific is about to come out with a new line of note takers, the PacMate, that it might be difficult for you as GW Micro to get the specs to write a driver to make that work as a Braille display or a speech synthesizer under WindowEyes?
Well, part of the problem, I think eventually, I think pressure, market pressure would force them, obviously, to work with this. But at first, if you were the developer of a screen reader and a Braille display, you certainly would want to make sure your two products work first and better than you would giving that information out to someone else to be able to basically compete with your product. And so those are the kind of conflicts of interest that we could see. So it's not necessarily that we won't get the information, it's the timeliness of that information. Are we going to get it and be able to release a version of WindowEyes that supports these new displays when they come out, or will it only work with their product at first, and then you have to wait a couple months before that information is given to other screen reader developers?
I suppose that they would say that rather than being a conflict of interest and trying to squeeze other competitors out, it's simply taking advantage of economies of scale and also synergies between products. For example, you're going to see jaws of a sort in the PacMate, and that's good for consumers. So maybe the answer, and I don't know whether there's any such talk going on, is to look at some of those independent companies like Kurzweil 1000, Kurzweil Educational Systems, GW Micro, and of course PDI, which is starting to get a lot bigger these days, and form a second conglomerate that also takes advantage of those synergies and economies of scale.
Well, that's exactly right, but I feel that in order to work with all these product lines, you don't need a buyout. You don't need to own all these companies and put them all together. I think, as I said before, we want to specialize in a screen reader. AI Squared wants to specialize in a large print, and PDI wants to specialize in their note takers and their CCTVs and things like that. So we can work with these other companies, and you'll see that the last couple trade shows that we went to, we passed out a T-shirt that showed our companies, four companies, Kurzweil, AI Squared, PDI, and GW Micro, where all their logos were on a T-shirt that we're handing out because we're all forming these partnerships. And I think a partnership is the way to do it, not a buyout of buying all the companies and trying to be the end-all, be-all in all of these product lines. I think the companies just need to cooperate and coordinate things better to get their products to coexist to each other. And you'll start seeing a lot more of that as far as getting our WindowEyes to work with a lot more of these products in a more seamless fashion, integrating them into some of these other products that are coming out. You'll start seeing a lot of that. And that can be done through partnerships, I think, more effectively than if you own all of the products themselves. One of the things that I found interesting is that WindowEyes has always been at least lower in price and things, and I think that we can keep these products lower because we don't necessarily have the huge overhead that we might have as a larger organization. One of the interesting things is that I think that Freedom Scientific is trying to coordinate all of these companies together so that they can help the end user, but yet we just saw a price increase. And you know, I don't see necessarily how all that synergy is helping if it's causing prices to go up. I think that by the individual companies specializing in the applications that they are and working out better partnerships, that's how we can see it benefits the blind person.
And venture capital, is that not an issue that a conglomerate type arrangement can address successfully so that you can employ more developers and get product to market more quickly?
Well, we're starting to see some of that, and as I said, some of these larger organizations, mainstream organizations, are very interested in getting their products to be accessible, and so they are willing to help us out with resources by financially or with actual human resources, anything like that to be able to do that. So I think that that's going to help us get some of these resources in to be able to do that. I mean, if anybody wants to give us a grant, I'll take it. But I don't know that the venture capitalists out there right now are going to get the return that they really are interested in. And I think we're kind of seeing that now in some of the other companies where they're not getting a return in this marketplace that they really think would be useful. And so I think it would be a mistake to try to do that at this point.
Very interesting. Let's go to this call who's been waiting patiently while I finish that thread. Area code 706. Thanks for waiting.
And good evening, Jonathan and Doug. Glad to have you on the program, Doug. It certainly has been interesting to hear your thoughts and everything on Window Eyes.
Thank you.
And I just have to say, along with, I guess, many of the other sentiments, I have to pass my regards along. Not only congratulate you on your new daughter there. I don't guess we'll name a candy bar after her like they did with Grover Cleveland's daughter, but John played that song there anyway, so that's a start anyway. So, yeah. But anyway, it's certainly, I guess everything, I got my copy of Window Eyes Pro and from UPS the other day. I have to really hand it to you all in doing a tremendous job in getting the new orders out, along with getting the replacement CDs out to those that had the original, I don't know what you call it, the bug CD or whatever said to them, but you all did a tremendous job, and you know, certainly I can't fault you for having the little delay because of all the things that you all went. I kind of sort of felt sorry for all of you having to send to suddenly blast in there and get all those other CDs out there. So you all did a tremendous job.
Well, I appreciate that very much. It was obviously a huge embarrassment to us that happened. But it's that same day that we found out about it, we immediately had sent out replacement CDs, or started sending out replacement CDs on that same day, because we knew that we had to address this as quickly as possible, give people a download to resolve it temporarily, and resend those CDs at no cost to get that going out, because that was definitely, without a doubt, our blunder. But I appreciate your patience and your willingness to state that.
Yeah, and all. Hey, just curious, did you get woke up by it, or how did you find out there was a problem? Did you just see email, or did somebody call you, or is it one of those things that you'll remember where you were on that day and everything like that?
Well, it's interesting because I don't know how many people know this, but our main office is in Indiana, but I am personally in California, and I have been out here for about 3 years, I guess. And so they're 3 hours ahead of us when they did that. And I remember getting a call about, I work out of my house, actually, and I remember getting a call around, I don't know what it was, maybe 5 a.m. or something.
Ooh.
Like that. And I thought, who is calling me at 5 a.m.? And then I heard the voice, and it was actually our Clarence Whaley, our director of marketing and sales. All right, I'm going to kill this guy when I wake up and talk to him. And then I heard the message, and my heart just sank. And this was the Monday after CSUN, so I came back Saturday night from CSUN. Monday morning, I got this message. I was also meeting with, we're localizing Window Eyes in a lot of European countries now. And our French distributor came, well, I met him at CSUN. He came up here to meet with me in San Jose for the day. So he was going to be there in 8 o'clock in the morning, all day long. Yet we had this issue going on. And so I was just ready to go sell pastries or something. I was ready to get out of this industry. But luckily, the French individual was very patient with us and allowed me to spend some time, and all of our Indiana staff were frantically going around, first of all, trying to figure out what the problem was, where it existed, why it existed. And after all of that, then we decided, okay, now we know what the problem is. How can we fix it? And we went off and did that. So, yes, I remember exactly. I was laying in bed when I heard the phone ring.
Yeah. But certainly your response to it was great, and I guess all of us, you know, I guess I, along with many other people, have to say, you know, just nothing but good things to say about you all for the way you handled it. It just, it made a few people wait a few more days longer, but, you know, you all really did a good job, and certainly you're definitely to be commended on that. So that was great. One thing I thought about too while I'm thinking about it, because I don't know how many calls are stacking up, but
are you fine for the moment?
Yeah, I just thought about this too. You were mentioning that you're working with several people on getting better access as far as like through MSAA and that type of thing. Are there any products, and you don't have to say which ones or anything like that, what is the likelihood of a new product coming in there and Window Eyes being able to work with it, with, say, maybe just a key press to turn MSAA mode on, though? Is there, or are we going to see a large number of updates. You know, here's a new version or a new release of Window Eyes and this sort of thing, because it's probably not the best thing in the world to have just a whole bunch of releases, but just a thought there, you know.
No, exactly. That's one thing that we kind of pride ourselves on as well, is that when we come out with a release, it's a good, stable release. We don't have to put out a patch after patch after patch. Of course, I say this, and what did we just do? That was a blunder there. That wasn't...
Oh, yeah. Well, these things happen, you know.
Yeah, that wasn't a bug in the Window Eyes. That was just shipping the wrong version of Window Eyes. But, right, so we definitely don't want to have to do that. And some of what we've done is we've been working with Microsoft on a lot of their new technology that's going to be released and has been released. But the problem is every time they come out with this little new thing that they add to it or whatever, we kind of had to compensate for that in Window Eyes. And obviously, as you just stated, we can't come out with a new version every time they do something. So what we've done is we've taken some of that technology, rather the coding that we have to do that's specific to these applications, and kind of made it external. So now we have this external file that's not really, I mean, Window Eyes reads this file on how to interpret the information, but it's not part of Window Eyes. So we can update that file and send out just an updated little file. We could put it on our web page just as we update our set files. And so we could update that as these new Microsoft things come out on a you know, as that day, basically. We can just put it out and make it available so that people can download that little file, that little patch, and put it in there. It doesn't replace Window Eyes, doesn't require a version change, it just makes it compatible with it. And so those types of techniques are what we're doing to try to keep up, because more and more people are now using MSAA.
Well, that's good to hear that people are actually trying to work with it. I guess the 508 thing has helped out in some respects to that. I've got an issue where at my workplace currently where they're using some sort of weird thing they're training us with, or they're attempting to train us with, something called a viewlet, and there's some link to Lotus Notes involved in this, but we're not using Lotus Notes, but somehow this is involving something using, I think it's some sort of Java interface with Internet Explorer, but I can't really say for sure. But I doubt if either, I know that I don't use Window Eyes at work, but I know that I dare say that neither program will work with this particular bit of technology very well at the moment, but they're looking at other possibilities as well. If they go to, say, some Macromedia Flash thing, it's very possible that Window Eyes may work with that. But certainly that Macromedia Flash thing was kind of a pleasant surprise, so that really worked out pretty good, too. I was able to do something with it, like, for example, even though the graphics and such weren't labeled very well, I was able to play around with a Flash greeting card, for example. So that was kind of interesting to be able to tell. At least I had more of an idea of what button I was clicking on and that sort of thing. So, again, my congratulations on getting a good product out, and I won't keep you, but, again, right now I have nothing but good to say about you all, so just keep up the good work.
Thank you very much for your very kind comments.
Thanks, Joe.
Take care, Jonathan and Doug, both of you. And all the best to your new family member, Doug.
Thank you very much. We're both excited.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye now. Gee, Doug, I think we should bill you for that call. That was area code.
Employee,
yeah, area code 559. Hello.
Good evening, John. It's Dave calling.
Hi there.
I'm not a Window Eyes user myself, though my partner in crime, Pam, is, and so I'm making attempts to learn it, because I just think I should, I got to use her PC sometimes, but one of the things that strikes me is. One of the main, one main issue that we haven't had access to in a long time is is the BIOS. And if a screen reader, and you were talking about your off-screen model. Yeah, you were talking about your off-screen model, and I was thinking to myself, if somebody could take that off-screen model and develop a BIOS reader or a reader that would load in safe mode, man, the market is theirs.
The BIOS is, even in the old DOS day, that's just been always a problem. But, of course, the problem is BIOS starts up before any operating system comes in.
That is true.
So before DOS loads, before Windows loads, the BIOS is there. So how can you write a DOS or a Windows application to run to read the BIOS when that operating system isn't even there to run you? It's like catch-22 thing.
The only thing I ever saw that worked with the BIOS was an old thing called the Speakqualizer, and it was a piece of hardware that you connected to. You might remember that one, Doug. It connected to your serial port or something like that, and you did get access to the BIOS that way.
Right, and there's, but boy, if somebody could, you know, even a small piece of hardware, something that would do it, man. If that could be, and I just the closer we are, the closer we're coming, and I gotta go. So take care, guys.
Yeah, just to kind of answer that a little bit further, I think there are some utilities out there that will allow you access to your BIOS that run under DOS or run under Windows. So that might give you some access to it, but it doesn't give you access to your full native BIOS that's on your particular machine. So we've expressed this to Microsoft. I don't know if they might put in some sort of utility, sort of like their Narrator for Windows. They might do something down the road that at least allows you access to the BIOS, because to me that's a 508 concern. I mean, you don't have access to your BIOS. So it seems to me at some point they would have to address that. And it probably would have to be done by either the BIOS manufacturer or Microsoft or both or somebody to be able to make that accessible.
All right. Was that it, Dave?
I think he hung up on it.
Oh, I thought he did too. Yeah, I see he's gone. Oh, well, there you go. Area code 760, you're speaking with Doug.
Yeah, hello there. I was listening to your program very, very intensely because I'm in a situation right now. I'm losing my sight, basically, and my wife is also going to be entering into computers. So I've already hurriedly built a computer for the other room and got it on the network. And I'm just trying to decide what would make... How should I base my choice? I'm sorry, I'm getting
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from. I apologize for that.
That's okay. Yeah. Anyway, I'm wondering, what would be the best gauge of deciding which screen reader to go with? I've got a demo of one of your other competitors on the other machine already loaded and sort of playing with it, going to a room for every couple of minutes and look at what it does, you know, go to some pages, you know, just basically thumb around and sort of make some decisions. And I'm wondering, how many of the applications is your program compatible with? I have a couple of them that I really need. One of them is called Ochduke, which is for an application I do. And another one is Music Match Jukebox, which I subscribe to their online music service. And I wanted to know if you've is there any support for that kind of stuff with the screen reader?
Well, that's why we have demos, because, as I said earlier in the show here, that one of our tasks with the screen reader is to work with everything out there. And there are thousands, if not millions, of applications out there. We obviously don't have the time to bring everyone in and try it out and see how it works, let alone all the different versions of every application that's out there. So we put out demo versions so that you can actually try it and see how it responds. We have our list that of Windowize users out there to ask people, because that's a huge resource of individuals that are maybe in your same circumstance a year ago or something, and they've actually tried it and played with it and can give you some comments on that. So when people call us and ask us, do we support these applications that we've never heard of, we suggest that they get on the list, if nothing, just long enough to ask the question and wait for some responses back to see if some of our user base out there has already tried some of that. Otherwise, it's up to you to sit down with the demo and the tutorial and the manual and see what you can do to make that application accessible. If you've got specific problems with the application, you can always call our support. Even if you've got a demo version, you can still call our support and say, I've got this application. We might not have heard of it before, but you can go in and say, well, this is what it's trying to do. This is what I'm hearing. How can I get it to work better? And we might be able to help you out getting that particular application, even though we've never seen it, talk a little bit better.
You'll be pleased to know that there are actually Ochduke set files for Windowize out there, and it works well. And I can't comment absolutely with certainty about Music Match, because I know there were a couple of issues to do with certain graphics in terms of selecting tracks, but Ochduke works well.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I wanted to know about there.
When you say that it works well, Jonathan, and I'm glad you said that, but I'm not sure that particular set file, if there is one needed, is included on the CD.
No, it isn't.
So you'd have to go to our webpage, just www.gwmicro.com, and go to support. From there, there's a support link, and there is a section to be able to download Windowize set files, and that is constantly growing with individuals that send us set files, ones we create, whatever. are on there. So you would certainly want to pan through that list anytime you have an application to see if there is any configuration for it already.
Okay, now how does the demo work basically? I haven't tried the other one runs for about 40 minutes and then you have to reboot. How do you guys, do you do a number of days or do you do, I prefer a number of days myself, but I don't know,
actually,
maybe that's...
No, we don't have that. We're debating if we need to do something like that. But right now our demo that you download or if you get a CD from us and we send the CD out at no cost, it is limited to 30 minutes at a time. So typically what happens is at 30 minutes you'll start getting this warning message. At 35 minutes you only get that warning message and you get no other usable speech. It doesn't hang your machine up or anything, but it just speaks this useless message to you all the time. So you can shut down WindowWise or whatever. Then you need to reboot the system and you can use it again for the 30 minutes.
The other thing
limited that you cannot do is you cannot change synthesizers.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, whatever you install it as is what you're stuck with, where the full version you can switch to anything at any point, whatever you want to be able to do.
Okay. Yeah, because it's a real situation. I've often thought it'd be better to give someone a specific amount of days because in 30 minutes you could just be starting to read the help document and then all of a sudden your message comes up, you've got to reboot, go back to where you started before, and then all of a sudden you've got to figure out where you were at before you got interrupted with this README message.
Yeah, it's a fine line. It's kind of a funny story, but I had an individual call that was actually passed up to me that was very frustrated with our 30 minutes. And when I asked him why and tried to get his circumstance, he said, well, I'm taking a college course and it's a one-hour course. Can you make it an hour? I don't like to reboot in the middle of my course. Now, that's not the function of the demo.
No.
So we have to be a little bit careful making it too easy for people to just download a free demo and not be inconvenienced much and use it. But the day approach is definitely something we probably charge something for that, a nominal fee to be able to send you something that would limit it to X number of days and just deal with that.
That's more than fair. And the other thing is, have you thought of offering, I know a lot of places offer like an easy payment plan if you wanted to make payments on your software, like say 2 monthly payments. Have you ever thought of doing something to that effect where you could bill someone's card 2 months in a row for the software?
We have definitely thought about it, and I'm not in that end of the company that kind of deals too much with that, but I know that they were talking about doing something to where maybe what they would do is basically what you're saying originally with the demo is send you something that's not that will time out, and because, of course, our fear is somebody moves off and stops their card 6 months from now and we don't get the other half.
Right.
So that we would have something that would have to be authorized by us to continue after 6 months or whatever the timeout is when the other payment is made or something. So we are toying with some ideas that we can maybe send you something that will work for a month, and when you make a payment, we'll give you another month's worth, and you make a payment, we'll give you another month's worth until it's paid off or something.
Yeah, what I was thinking about was actually a monthly, like a lot of shopping channels. I'm not going to say any specific names, obviously, but when you go to some of these businesses, they'll say, okay, we offer a convenient, easy pay plan. And I wouldn't say drag it out. If the price of your software doesn't sound that out of hand. So in most cases, somebody could probably pay the thing off in 2 months. You divide it up into 2 monthly installments, you probably would be pretty comfortable. And I can see your point about that. But I just wanted to ask about that, because my main thing has been, I just built up a complete computer for about $400. I didn't spend that much, but I did put a good system together. I just went and bought one of these, you know, I don't know if you have a lot of blind folks that do this. You just go buy one of these bundled systems, and you basically get a hard drive. I upgraded the power supply and CD-ROM and so on, and the floppy and et cetera, et cetera. And I find that the software for it to speak is costing me probably 3 times what I spent on the entire computer in most cases.
Yeah, of course, when you look at it, how many computer systems did they sell at that $500 price versus how many screen readers do we sell at that $595 price?
That's the problem.
You know, they sell millions where we sell, you know, many, many thousands. So it's different.
Yeah, I understand that part. I was just trying to come up with some ideas to make it so that more folks, I don't think people aren't necessarily against the Ford paying for it. I think it's just a matter of making it in the hands of more folks where if they were given that month grace period, you know, maybe say 2 months.
Good thought. I appreciate your thoughts. I have to move it on.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. There you go. Let's thank you for waiting. You're speaking with Doug Joffrey.
Oh, good evening, Jonathan and Doug.
Hi there.
I'm so glad I got in. Doug, this is Pam Drake.
Hi, Pam.
And My life has taken a lot of turns, as evidently has yours. I'm with Dave McElroy here in California, and the reason for the abrupt departure was because his cell phone was dying. And he was, or you were, I believe, going to say something to him regarding the off-screen model. We were, or the BIOS. We weren't sure whether you were saying something.
If you check Pam, if you check the archive or when it replays, you'll hear Doug, who went into some length to give you an answer there. So
okay,
check
okay,
the archive.
So I'll tell you, I'll just say that I'm very. But you didn't require a response for him from him.
No.
Yes.
Okay. That's all we were really concerned about. I will tell you, I just, you know, really enjoy Window Eyes, and I will definitely purchase the upgrade. I will be on the phone tomorrow morning.
Fantastic. I appreciate it, Pam.
All right. Good to talk to you.
Okay. Thanks,
care.
Pam.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, look at this. It's like, phone now, but don't send any money. It's now 29 minutes past the hour. We still have plenty of time if you would like to question Doug Geoffrey of GW Micro about anything, whether it might be the future of WindowEyes, if you're not a WindowEyes user at present and you've got a question, anything at all. Our number is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And then courtesy of spiderphone.com, just dial that conference code, which is 0480-5512. And you'll see that in the title bar of your media player. One thing that I've often wondered, Doug, is whether you might be tempted into the X Windows side of things.
Oh. Well, that's the problem. There are other operating systems out there. You've got all the Apple stuff and X Windows. I mean, there's just so much out there we'd love to be able to do. But a lot of that is driven by the market share of who's actually using this. And right now we feel that Windows is keeping us so busy on that. And obviously it's the larger operating system, the most commonly used operating system. So we're trying to focus everything we can on that. If we see that this starts shifting and people are abandoning Microsoft or whatever and going off to these other operating systems, then we'll take a very serious look at those. But we feel right now that we just have to stay focused on this operating system and make it the best that we possibly can.
It's a chicken and egg.
People are wanting that, and we see enough people wanting it, then we'll seriously take a look at some of these things.
Yeah, it's a chicken and egg thing, I think, because a lot of people would like to divest themselves of Windows, but don't really want to go back to the command line days of the traditional Linux, and would quite like to have an X Window, I think it's just X Window without an S, option that would do the job for them.
Yeah, there's always that catch-22, and unfortunately we can't necessarily invest the years developing such a product and find out that those 100 people are now really happy. We would not recoup that cost. So we'd need to definitely do some research to make sure that our investment would be recouped in a timely manner to be able to do that, because it is very costly in resources and timing. And, of course, what we do there might cause us to suffer some of our other products, and that's why we try to stay very focused.
Are there challenges in terms of developing a product like WindowEyes when, as a sighted person, you might be tempted to take a look at the screen? I'm just quite interested in how you test WindowEyes once you've done a bit of code work to make sure that, from a blind person's point of view, the integrity of the product is preserved.
Well, of course, the ultimate test is our blind beta testers that actually go off and beat me up or whatever because of something that's grossly wrong.
Hmm.
But I've been in this field since early 80s, and so I think even though I'm sighted, I still believe that I have a feeling of what really needs to be done and what is useful, what is not. Typically, when we bring in sighted developers or whatever, we have to beat them on the head for several months to get that mentality into their head that people can't see this stuff. They can't grab the mouse. They can't do this. And so it takes a long time. Some people never get it, I think. Sighted people never get it of where you really need to go with this technology. And so I like to think, anyway, that I have a good feel on that. A lot of our staff is blind, are blind themselves, and, of course, they give us feedback all the time and beat me up on, hey, Doug, you know, this just isn't usable or this isn't right or whatever, and we'll take a step back on that. But I'd like to think that I can catch it before they can even on what's really going wrong with that. So.
What's really quite impressive about GW Micro is the long service that staff tend to give to your company, at least the staff on the front line that we see. The same old names just keep on popping up, and that institutional knowledge is obviously very important.
Oh, it's tremendous. I mean, our tech support guys have been there for a very long time. Mike Lawler has been there, oh my gosh, how long, how old is God? I don't know, but it's amazing how long these individuals stay with us, because we are a family atmosphere. We're kind of a very comfortable size. Everybody knows everybody. We all have a good time, and we don't have that constant changing over of employees, which is a huge drain on resources, because you've got to constantly bring those people up. So when we look for people, we look for people that are going to stay very focused and loyal to us, and we return that exactly right back to them. So everything they give to us, we like to think that we fold right back into them and just make it a very pleasant place to work. Some days are more pleasant than others, obviously, but we feel that everybody is very happy and nice family atmosphere.
How has the telecommuting side of things challenged you, or perhaps not so much challenged you? Has it been as difficult as you'd expected to go out to California and work remotely like you are?
Well, we are in the 2000s here, right? So we do have the technology to be able to do that easily. And so obviously with Messenger and DSL modems and all this kind of good stuff going around, I can communicate just about as well as when I was in my separate office back in Indiana. The nice thing is that I don't get the constant interruptions of people walking in. But, of course, the downside is I can't necessarily walk in on somebody else as easily and start a conference or start a call, you know, just some sort of meeting right then and there as conveniently. So it's definitely a trade-off. One of the nice things of being in Silicon Valley is that we are very close. I'm very close to a lot of the organizations. Adobe is, I can almost see them out my front door. So Oracle is right there, and we're going to be doing some stuff with them. And some of the other companies that I can't name right now are right in this Bay Area that I can just drive to and work with them and do some things with them, which is makes it very handy in that respect. I don't think Adobe would be where they are right now if I weren't in this area. They definitely knew that they had to make their product accessible, but they weren't necessarily looking at the right path, I don't believe. And so we kind of worked with them and got them to come up with what they have now, and I think it was the right approach. So being in this area definitely has advantages. Clarence Whaley, our director of marketing and sales, is off in Tennessee, and so I think it's kind of nice to have these different areas throughout the country, because that way we can kind of cover those areas a little bit better and be able to take advantage of some of the areas within the United States.
When we spoke with Rick Brown from Adobe on Main Menu, I think he made the point that at one stage they were looking at a self-voicing application. What's your view on that? Self-contained applications that anybody can pick up and install and make them go versus the MSAA approach with screen readers?
Well, again, there are pluses and minuses, but overall I think they're more negative. I personally have always been against the self-talking applications, and that kind of goes back from way back in the Apple II days when I was working for Computer Aids Corporation back in the early 80s and wrote a lot of the Word Talk, File Talk, Braille Talk and things. And back in the Apple II days, way back then, people had to use dedicated talking applications, products that were written for blind people. They had to use that. I couldn't use, as a blind person, I couldn't use this off-the-shelf application that everybody else in my office is using. You know, I had to use WordTalk. And so I was kind of being alienated in that respect, because I can't use what they were using. And that same mentality is kind of the same under Windows now, is that you want to be able to use what your sighted coworker is using. I don't want to necessarily have to have this dedicated talking application with this unique interface that nobody else knows about except the blind community. I want to be able to use the same product as everybody else. I want to be able to call my IT department and be able to get help on this application if I need it. I don't want to necessarily have to do my own thing or whatever. So that's one respect of it. And the other is, of course, as you use all these individual talking applications, they all have their own interface. You've got the potential of fighting each other. If you can have multiple applications going at once, they might be fighting each other if they're using the same synthesizer. How do you adjust the rates and the parameters of all these things? They're all different. So by having one screen reader be able to be your interface into the synthesizer, I think that just makes it much more seamless. And that's the whole idea of Windows, is the commonality between all of the components. If you know how to run this application, you're probably going to be able to do this one. And by having a screen reader be your interface into the synthesizer, I just think that helps that all the more. And right now, if you have these talking applications, you need to make sure that your screen reader shuts down, or else you have your talking app shut down and let your screen reader do it. And that's just one extra hassle that a blind person has to deal with. And so, personally, I don't like that. One other option is we do have an interface into Window Eyes. So if you want, instead of having, let's say, an Adobe, if they wanted to, instead of having a self-talking app, they could have just said, oh, wait a minute, a screen reader is running. Let me pipe all the information through them and let them do the voicing. So that way, as far as controlling the voice parameters and what synthesizer you're using, it's still done by your screen reader, the same parameters, controls that you used before, but now you've got this talking app. So that respect, maybe that's better. But a standalone talking app, I just personally have never really liked.
It's interesting that that's one of the approaches that we've adopted for the ACB radio tuner packages, that it looks and sees if Window Eyes and another screen reader is in memory, for that matter, and talks directly to the screen reader. So that is there, and that's a different thing again from MSAA.
Exactly. Well, yes, it doesn't even have to be MSAA related at that point. It could be, but it doesn't have to be. So, but yes, you can write an application that may be extremely complicated and you just want it to say some things or shut up here and there or whatever, but we have that interface, and we can give that to developers if they choose to interface into that. So it's very simple to tell, hey, Window Eyes is running, let me send this off to them, or hey, this screener is running, send it off to them, or whatever. They can do that approach if they want.
You made the comment about how good it is to be able to call your IT department at work and get support for the product you're using, just like a sighted person. One of the things that I have never envied about those tech support people and screen reader manufacturers is that I suppose in many cases the requests that they get are really requests for help with their application and not the screen reader.
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, obviously since our tech support people answer the phone and you get a human, that entices a lot of people to call us up for non-GW Micro-related questions. It's more Microsoft questions or Adobe questions or whatever. The thing they think that makes it relevant is they're running Window Eyes with it, and it's difficult for some people to understand that Window Eyes is the tool to your interface. It's not really the interface, and you need to learn that application from that manufacturer's documentation or their support or whatever. We'll certainly help to the extent we can. If it's an obvious question and we know the quick answer, we'll do it. But we're not necessarily going to go off and research something that's totally unrelated to us. We'll try to politely let you know who you can talk to and deal with those questions with the manufacturer that you should do. Our list is the same way. A lot of times we'll see unrelated questions on our list, and we'll kind of slightly slap their hands and remind them that they need to be keeping it GW Micro related. A lot of people will talk about this problem and at the very end and say, oh, by the way, I'm using Window Eyes, and I think they think that makes it relevant all of a sudden. But so we do try to keep it very focused, and we certainly try to help people the best we can, but we have to be considerate of our users first, and we don't want to tie up our support lines while we're helping you figure out how to use Microsoft Word, for instance.
But the flip side of that, too, and we've talked about some of the problems with other companies' tech support, is that a lot of the people that you get at the end of the phone don't even know that screen readers exist and don't know how a blind person can use a computer if they can't see the screen, and they're very tempted to blame any problem whatsoever on the screen reader and say, because you're using a screen reader, we can't help.
Well, that's true, and that's very unfortunate. I think it's getting a little bit better as the education gets out there, especially if you're talking to Microsoft or some of the larger organizations. They're not doing that now like they might have in the past. But I still suggest that to individuals that are calling mainstream manufacturers to not mention at first that they're using a screen reader and see where that goes, because in most cases it doesn't make a bit of difference. And that's just going to, as you said, it's going to cloud their mind. They're going to immediately say that that's the problem, get rid of it, and not help you at all. So if you go through the problems first without that, then I think you're going to go a long way. Now, at some point, you may have to tell them, and we can deal with that. But that, unfortunately, is a problem at times, and depending on the organization, we might be able to try to educate that organization. But the Microsoft, I want to know about it because we have great contacts, and we can go in there and slap that person's hands and make sure that they are educated in what's going on and not give that generic answer. But I do think that that's getting better. It's not nearly as common now, I think, when you call, as it used to be. Still an issue, but not quite as bad.
That's good to hear. Yes, I often wear an earphone connected to the synthesizer or something so that even when I'm taking their advice and following certain steps, they can't hear the speech.
Exactly.
Seems to calm them down. The the whole question of the future of Window Eyes is obviously very exciting. It sounds like we're going to see a series of really exciting new features announced in due course, working with additional applications. You must be feeling very positive about where the company is heading then.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there are days when I think, why am I doing this? But I think no matter where I'd be working, I would have those days. But then there are days like when we finally release the product and you get all this positiveness, or so far your callers have been extremely complimentary towards the thing. And so that's, it's so nice to see that. When I go out in the field and I talk to people saying they're doing something that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do without the product, that's what pumps me up, and that's what keeps us going on this product, just making it better and better and better. So, yes, we've got all kind of exciting things to get to do. It's a never, never ending process. It's just always going. As long as Microsoft is putting out new stuff, we've got plenty of job security.
Now, if people are thinking, should I or should I give Doug a call, we're almost at the end of our time, so this is your last opportunity. This is your final boarding call. Area code 212-812-2800 and the PIN 0480-5512. One application that we haven't asked about specifically, and I'm surprised it hasn't come up yet, is Norton Antivirus 2002. And this is doing what a lot of new applications appear to be doing, using HTML-type interfaces, which the MSAA-type modes work with to varying degrees of success. Have you had any, or can you make any comment on Norton 2002 specifically?
Yeah, I'm not as up to speed on that. I know that that's an issue. I know that that is logged as something for us to look into, because I think it just recently came to our attention of what's going on. And I think in some cases, basically, it's just a matter of not using our normal MSAA mode. In some cases, maybe don't turn it on. Let it use its interface. Or in some cases, maybe we should enable it when we're not enabling it. And that ability is part of that external file that I was talking about before that will allow WindowEyes to adapt with these things. So other than that it's specifically logged in our to-do list, which is a nice big list, we definitely will be looking into that and trying to find out what's going on with that.
Yeah, I've been meaning to mention to you for ages, I think that with so many applications now using MSAA, that having the Control-Shift-A key defined in the default WindowEyes set file is a good thing to do, and I often put it there myself now, because you just find now that turning it on in so many applications makes a difference.
Right, because the MSAA mode is based on, majority of it anyway, we've made it available in Adobe Acrobat Reader and Lotus Notes and some others. But most applications just use the IE engine, the Internet Explorer engine, which, of course, is what you use for your browser, is then used in other things like Eudora or Windows Help. Or a lot of the applications use that same technology. So you get the MSAA mode for free in that application, which is really cool because more and more applications are starting to use IE's engine to represent their information on the screen because HTML is becoming so popular and some of the other technologies that do that as well. So we're going to see more and more of that. And so, yes, I think we do need to start making all of our set files have the MSA toggle as part of their configuration. And I think we will see that come very soon.
Yeah, and we mentioned Real One before and some of the issues. But there are some good things. And there is so much content that we couldn't access before with Real One or that wasn't even there, that we can now access out of the box because it's using that IE engine. All of their channel content and the web content that they now display within their own window is all there right now.
That's right, and that's part of that technology I was saying, like the Flash technology. All right now it's all old Flash components that are out on the web pages, but as Macromedia develops their Dreamweaver, which actually produces some of this Flash components and things and other development tools of Flash, people are going to get this for free. It's just going to happen, and that's what happened there, basically. If you write an application and you don't even know a blind person exists, but you use the IE engine, it's now accessible. And so they get credit for it, even though they didn't know that they did anything special. And that's where it should be. That's what we need to do with Microsoft tools, with all these other application manufacturers out there that have these developing tools. They need to make it so that it's just built in for free, and the developer doesn't even have to think about it. That's the only way we're going to get it in everybody's hands as well as it should be.
And is Microsoft doing enough to make that clear to developers that there are these benefits in taking that approach?
In my opinion, not as good as they could be doing. We see a little bit of it here and there. There are certain product groups within Microsoft that are very good and very diligent at it, There are others that I'm ready to just beat over the head because they just don't get it yet. And that's the problem with an organization that large, is that you think you're starting to make headways, and you are in this department, but you go over here, and they don't even know what's going on. They don't have a clue what's going on. And so it just takes a while. It's certainly better than it was. I mean, if I look back, well, back in 95 when WindowWise 1.0 came out, I think, oh, my gosh, how could we even get anywhere with back then with what was there? So tremendous strides have already been made, but there's plenty of room for improvement. And Microsoft's, their accessibility department is growing. It's, unfortunately, it's kind of always changing, so it's kind of difficult to get in there, but we've got great inroads in there. Microsoft uses this for great resources. We have, they decided to actually use us to create the driver chaining tools and the sample code for when this goes public. We actually developed the code, so they actually paid us to do that. So we've got great relationships with them. We've got the technology and the know-how to be able to do a lot of things with them, and they see that and have been taking advantage of that.
Well, the time has gone quickly, as it always does when we speak, and I certainly appreciate your candid and interesting answers. And we'll let you get back to being a proud dad and look forward to future releases of WindowWise with much anticipation, as always.
Well, thank you very much. We hope to have new releases of Little Joffreys as well as new releases of WindowWise.
Absolutely. Doug version 4.0, it must be almost now. Have a wonderful evening, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Okay, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thanks, Doug. Bye-bye. That's Doug Joffrey of GW Micro, and if you would like to join the GW Micro list, by the way, because we've mentioned that on a couple of occasions tonight, you can do that. All the information is there on the WindowWise webpage, from which you can download a demo of the product as well and find out about what GW Micro perceives the benefits of WindowWise to be and all of those things. It's at www.gwmicro.com. That's all one word, www.gwmicro.com. But if you wish to, you can subscribe to the WindowWise mailing list by sending a message to listserv, that's listserv, at gwmicro.com. And in the body of the message, type subscribe space gw-info, and that should get you on. And if you missed that information, then it's all on the website where you can join. I think they have an announcements list as well if you just want to find out when new exciting things are happening. But if you want to join the WindowWise community and discuss the product, get your questions answered, particularly if you're downloading the demo and it's all a bit new, then you can certainly do that. Now, tomorrow night, Dennis Miller and Jim and the Snowman. Never sure to call, whether to call him Jim or not. The Snowman and Dennis Miller are back with Miller Time to begin at 1 Universal Time, which, because the clocks have changed in most of the United States, is at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Pacific. And they'll be hopefully there for an hour or so with Miller Time. And then, assuming that we can witness the resurrection of Mike Bullis, then we will have the sound-off show with Snowman and Bullis, or Bullis and the Snowman, or Snowball, or whatever. That will be on at 9 o'clock, at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 Pacific, 2 Universal Time. And you can call them and participate in the party line, and that will also be replayed throughout the day on ACB Radio Mainstream. And finally, a reminder that on Wednesday, Universal Time, again at 1 Universal, that's Tuesday evening at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, we will be having the main menu show, where we will be demonstrating Reel 1 and showing you a few tips and tricks to help you make do with what we have in the meantime. And we'll also be speaking with the general manager for consumer software for Reel Networks about Reel 1 and some of the issues that we have all found with it. I haven't recorded the interview yet, so I can't even tell you what's likely to happen, but I'm sure it'll be interesting. So that's all coming up on ACB Radio Mainstream. Hope you'll stay tuned. I appreciate your calls and listening in today. Certainly was nice and busy on the server today with lots of listeners tuning in. And, of course, if you have any suggestions for who you would like to see on Blindline, we always welcome those. Just drop us an email at blindline@acbradio.org, and we'll see if we can get somebody on that you might be interested in. Thanks again. We'll speak with you next week.
Programming on ACB Radio is made possible in part through financial support from the Verizon Corporation. Verizon, a proud sponsor of ACB Radio.
ACB Radio Mainstream is always looking for new and innovative programming. But in 2002, they found me. I'm Dave Williams here in Preston, where we're putting together ACB Radio Mainstream's newest program, The UK Connection. We start Thursdays at 1 GMT, that's Wednesday evenings in the States, with a mix of news, views and interviews. We're looking for your contributions as well, so drop us a line, dave@acbradio.org, that's dave@acbradio.org, or you can pick up the phone and call the UK on 44700 533 8876. That's 44700 533 8876. The UK Connection.
Don't you think he sounds tired?